Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, hello, hello from East Ham, which I'm hoping to show in a very positive light today. But this isn't a particularly auspicious start. We are next to the $8.99 buffet poster for what I'm sure is an excellent fast food joint, a few feet away from some rubbish bins tucked down a side street next to a white van. It can only improve from here. We're going to be exploring the area with Sue Sinton-Smith of Footprints of London, also with Rachel Matthews from East Blam and Liz Clough from Red Bull Studios. Hi.
Hi. Hi.
Have I bigged up the area sufficiently, do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think it's definitely going to improve from now on.
Sue, maybe we should start with what is Footprints of London?
Oh, well, Footprints of London is a cooperative of guides, and we do walking tours mainly for Londoners, but anybody else is welcome. And we go around places where maybe other people might not go and pick out interesting stories and things to look at.
So what's the collective idea here? Is this you market yourselves together, or you share a particular area, or how does that work?
Well, we're all professional guides, so we've all done guiding qualifications, which I think is important. And we work together to put on festivals, market our things together. We share tweets and Facebook posts and sort of take turns to market things, I guess, and go on each other's walks, generally support each other, and yeah, that's it.
Rachel, how do you know this woman?
Well, actually, I met Sue I write a local blog about East Ham, which I started when I moved into the area 18 months ago, because there wasn't much information on East Ham on the internet, certainly not positive information. And so I thought, well, as I discover it, maybe I'll publish it. So I set up a Twitter feed for East Blam, and Sue contacted me and said, oh, hey, did you know that there is a residents' association in the area that meet regularly, B, that we're trying to set up a few community activities, and C, that I do a guided tour of East Ham, would you like to come along? So I came along to the tour, and then we went and had a cup of tea and talked about kind of what was happening in East Ham, got roped into the residents' association and a few other initiatives, and the rest is history. So
you came to the area. Did you arrive here and think, I'm determined to be positive? Is it sort of fresh starts? Let's put a bright light on it?
No, not at all. We chose to move to the area because we liked it, but something that's really noticeable about East Ham is if you are moving to the area, first thing you tend to do is Google it, and what you tend to find is a lot of negative press. And we knew that we liked the area, that we wanted to move here, that we'd seen a lot of things that were interesting, but there was nothing on the internet telling you that. So then when other people Googled the area, all they got was negativity. So it wasn't really about putting a positive spin on something. It was about telling people what was already here and showing them what was already happening that maybe they didn't know about.
Since we've got a public relations trough to climb out of, then, should we start really bad? What sort of things have you read about the area then? What was the negativity?
I think when you Google it, you get news first, and so news stories tend to be about crime in the area. So if you Google, is East Ham, the first thing that comes up is safe. And I think that's because people are seeking the information that isn't readily available. So I don't think it's necessary that there was loads of kind of really terrible stories, just that news is the first thing that Google finds you. And so then you tend to get the negative stories because there's not that many published that are positive. So.
Liz, your studio event space thing.
Yeah.
As you build it before we started recording.
Yeah.
Which you might have honed by now. Red Door is what?
It is a shared artist studio building with a public space, which is open sometimes, not all the time. And I came upon it by accident a few years ago, mostly because I've always worked in Newham. As long as I've been in London, I've worked in Newham, and I ended up falling in love with it and being asked to take it on as my own project. So that's what it is.
How did somebody ask you to take a thing? Because it sounds like you were already in love with this thing, and then someone went, yeah, well, just have this.
Well, actually, the first time I walked in, I met the lady that was running it originally, and because there was a yard sale there, and I lived not far away, so I went to have a look. And she was one of the first things she said to me, bizarrely, we need someone to take this on because we're moving to Kazakhstan. And I actually did. It was bizarre, it was.
Yeah.
But I actually didn't end up actually taking it on for about another year and a half. But I just was involved and helped out, and things changed, and eventually they left, and I did. So that's
possibly one of the weirdest origin stories I've ever had.
It's what happens to me all the time. That's how I get jobs, honestly.
Just through people moving to Kazakhstan.
Through people just saying things to me like that. Yeah.
Okay. So, and we're heading your way today, aren't we? That's the general direction of travel.
Yeah, via a few other things. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to have a look around, and we're going to add that positive shine, not a positive spin. We're going to be revealing the positive side to East Ham. Well, so let's make a start. We're just over the road from the station here. What's the first feature that you would direct our attention towards?
Well, we usually start at the station because before the railways came, this was completely rural. So there were fields everywhere. And then the station was built for the London, Tilbury and Southend line in 1854. And rebuilt for the District Line in 1902. And so you can still see it's quite an attractive building.
It's a fairly low slung affair up a slight rise. I do get the impression around here there is a general flatness. We're at a crossroads and we can see pretty levelly and pretty much in straight lines everywhere.
Yeah, I guess. There are lots of...
Well, it doesn't sound like you agree with me very wholeheartedly.
Well, yeah, straight lines.
Oh no, are you going to be a diplomatic tour guide?
Diplomatic tour guide, I don't know about that.
Rachel Kolsky wouldn't be standing for any of this. She'd be putting me in my place immediately.
Well, yeah, we've got rows and rows of traditional terraced housing, which is what attracted me to the area. Looking for a small house, and there are loads of them around here, so it was just about affordable as well.
How long did you say you've been a East Ham resident?
Getting on for 3 years, so not that long.
So you're all fairly fresh to the area then?
We are.
Over we go. We've got Burgess Road.
This way.
And we're being directed away from Burgess Road. And we're off up the main street, High Street North.
Right. Now, we would stop... If we were doing the tour, we would stop more often, but Burgess Road...
We are sort of doing the tour.
Burgess
Road... Don't tell Sue, she doesn't know.
...is where one of the famous residents of East Ham was born, Bert Whedon. Bert Whedon was somebody who was... He was born in 1920 and his dad was a train driver, so that was very handy for living there. And he was a guitarist. He wanted to make the guitar the star of the show, and he worked with the Shadows and loads of different people. But his main famous thing was he wrote this teach yourself guitar manual called Play in a Day, and it was something that lots of famous guitarists like John Lennon, Paul McCartney, people like that, they all learned how to play guitar using this manual. So you picture them all in their bedrooms strumming away. And he got an OBE for his services to music.
And we're off down Latham Road right now. We have left the quite a few fast food places on the High Street there, and the pace is more sedate. I think we have a school to our right, and a very interesting building, tall towers, domed, like a Turkish Hogwarts.
Yes, so this is Latham Road Junior School, and it was built in 1898 to celebrate Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee, and it's tall, as you see. It's four form entry, it's got 17 classrooms, and it has recently had a brand new extension, which is sadly taking up a big chunk of the original playground, which is a bit of a shame. But they copied, this was Essex at the time, and they copied the London School Board's idea of building up because the land was needed for housing, loads and loads of houses being built. The East Ham was the fastest growing area in the country in the 1890s. So the houses were being built really, really fast, but they needed the places for school. So a bit like now, really, demand for housing space. And so now we're building houses up instead of schools.
Now, how does that work? You've got the district line, I think you said very early in the 20th century, arriving. The housing all springing up just a couple of years earlier, and presumably lots of building in process as the tube arrives. Where are all the residents of these houses working?
They're working in the docks, on the railway, some of them also in factories. So we've got, not far away, we've got Tate and Lyle Sugar Factory. So in my house, the people in the first census I could find, they were sugar boilers. So it was a sugar boiler and his family.
Was part or some of East Ham built for the middle classes as well? Because I thought that there's quite big Victorian houses, isn't there, as well, like quite a lot of streets. And I read that they built it in one go as a kind of new town. Like, not all of it, obviously. There's lots of, like, dockers' cottages and things like that as well. But I think that's quite interesting that it was built kind of... And Central Park's quite, like...
Yeah, quite close together, because the Central Park estate was built on land which was built up by Burgess family. And Erno Burgess was a paymaster general with the East India Company. And his descendants developed the area. But if you look at the houses, they sort of are in kind of sets of four quite often, and they're different designs. So people would buy a plot of land, build a few houses on it, and then buy another plot, and then they rented out. They were quite often clerks and skilled workers, so they're quite well built houses.
We noticed that when we bought ours, because we looked on the plans and it said that the first plot was bought in 1900, and then each house kind of on the road had like a different date of like 5 years, 10 years later. And we wondered whether that was the case, that people had bought a space and then gradually built up the houses. But...
So if you have a look there, you can see like the carvings around the house, the sort of doors there. And if you just look across to the other side of Caulfield Road, then there's a sort of much more geometric shape, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny, I was noticing this somewhere in North London. I was today exactly the same thing, where the windows of one house and the next house, they're clearly the same age, but just of an annoyingly different design to one another. And you think, you know, how did that happen?
You can notice it on some of the roads around Central Park, where they've got different, I don't know what they're called, the stone kind of decorations on the front of the houses. And Henniker have got one, they've got like crosses and a little porthole. And Montpellier and the others are different. Is that just the same about the architecture, maybe? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because they're quite a lot with the cross shape, aren't there, in your street?
I just wondered whether it was, a builder's signature.
Something that's quickly become apparent is there is a lot of terraced housing here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just street after street.
Like, quite a lot of them are really beautiful, and as they've been kind of done up over the years, some of the original features have been lost. But then what you're seeing at the moment is quite a lot of people maybe digging up their front garden and then discovering that there's like original tiles underneath, or there was a whole kind of piece of work done on encouraging people to find the tiles in their doorways. So some of the houses around the park have like this beautiful period tiles.
Lizzie, as well as having a base in the area, are you a resident here?
No, I live not far away, but I'm not a resident.
What does that mean? You've been very discreet.
I live near Forest Gate.
Oh no!
So 20 minutes.
And should we be talking to you? I'm not sure.
I'm here all the time. I work here every day, and I have a studio here, and I'm completely I like being at my studio much more than I like being at home. So
still new, right? We're like one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I've always been in New, like, I've always worked in New York. So,
and it's not an obvious place to like either, is it? We know, of course, that it's one of the most impoverished boroughs. I think it might be the most impoverished borough, certainly of London. But there's a lot of shabbiness around, isn't there? And not shabby chic either.
I like that, though.
You do?
I really do. Like, I think it's interesting, and I think everywhere, all of London has been like that at one point or another, and it's only really what people say about, things change and areas get different, and, it's about people, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, there's lots of people everywhere in London. Like, I remember when I started doing the studio thing, and some of my friends saying to me, but you won't get people to come there. And I was like, there's people there. There's already people there. Like, what are you on about? I want people to just come from where they are.
I'm just thinking of the amount of investment in the sort of social things that you're talking about, you know, having provision for the people.
I think there's quite a strong sense of community in the area. There's a lot more going on here that brings lots of different parts of the community together than anywhere else that I've ever lived in London. So I've lived in East London for a long time, and we lived in Stepney Green and Bethnal Green, and then we moved up to North East. We lived in Stoke Newington, and there was very few inclusive community activities that they tended to sway one side or the other, whereas in Newham there are a lot of inclusive community activities and a lot of community groups working together to do stuff that's good for everyone, and that makes an area feel nice and interesting and worth being part of. So
yeah, definitely. And the poverty thing, apparently Newham has gone from being fourth poorest down to 23rd this year, so it's made a dramatic...
Nationally.
Mm-hmm. So it has made a sort of dramatic increase. Things are definitely looking up.
What do you think that is? Olympic legacy? Or?
I have to say, yeah, I think part of it is, yeah. There's a lot more money being invested in the area, and the council's working quite hard to kind of smarten things up and improve the lot. They've got their landlord licensing system, things like that. Definitely helps.
Oh, I was just going to say that also I think there's still lots of poverty, definitely. I don't think necessarily the poverty's got better. I think that, but there's more wealth as well now. I think people moving in and things changing in other ways, but there's definitely not lots less poverty, I don't think.
But I think it's more about the people making the changes than those kind of investments necessarily. There's a desire for people, individual people, to pull together to make some changes that they want to see, and also to prevent changes that they don't want to see as well. I think that's what's making the difference.
That's a big deal, isn't it? You can be just totally disincentivised. It might seem like such a Sisyphean task to try and do anything about it that you don't bother.
Just wanted to pause here because just on this corner here is... I talk a little bit about wartime in East Ham, and we were quite lucky because there aren't many factories in this area, so we did escape the worst of the bombing. But the there's newly built property, well, newly built from the 60s, which was where there was a direct hit, and it was one of the worst nights of bombing in the war. It was the 19th of April in 1941, and this house suffered a direct hit, but over that night, 153,000 incendiary bombs and 1,000 tons of high explosive were dropped on London, and it was like a terrible, terrible night in the history. But this very place was one of the places that Queen Elizabeth came to visit when she was doing her tours around visiting bombed out places. So I'd just like to sort of talk about that while we're here as part of the tour. And now we're heading back towards the high street, away from the quietness, I'm afraid, for a bit. But do look, as you go around, we like to sort of see it's an interesting area. You hear lots of different languages and see all sorts of different kinds of clothing as well. And I think that's part of the richness of the area. That's one of the things I really like about it.
Well, you think that's part of the richness of the area. As recent political events will remind us, for other people, that would be a big mark against the area, hearing people speaking other languages.
The area has changed, obviously, over the years, but London itself has always been a welcoming area for refugees and people coming from different countries, but also people being recruited to come from other countries. This obviously was in Essex until 50 years ago.
Well, that wasn't obvious to me. That's interesting.
Did you not know that?
Was that part of its identity, do you think?
That it was Essex.
Mm. Oh, that rather than just being an administrative fact, did it sort of perceive itself in that way, do you think?
I think so. The people who lived here. So maybe that's why sometimes people talk about Essex as though it's some kind of wonderful utopia. I'm not sure. Do you like that? After the war, one of the things that happened was that new housing estates were being built in Essex, places around Dagenham, Beckentry, and I think people looked to the houses they had here. These lovely terraced houses, of course, at the time had no indoor bathrooms or anything like that, and these new housing estates must have looked very attractive to people. And also, I think they were maybe seeing the possible closure of the docks coming and things like that. And so they moved out, and at the same time that people were being recruited from the Commonwealth to work in the buses, NHS and things like that. And they came in and moved into the houses that were being vacated. And so over the years, different groups have moved out as they've made money. They've moved into bigger houses and things. And then more people have come in. Each lot kind of moves over to make room for the next lot. And they've always, as far as I can see, in this area, certainly people tend to rub along fairly well together.
You know what I should do to test whether that's still happening? I know a little bit about what Liz does. What do you two do when you're not doing this? You're the new crop of residents. What do you do?
I'm a design studio manager for an advertising agency.
I work for charity Deafblind UK as an outreach officer.
So you're both white collar.
I guess so. Yeah.
So you seem apprehensive about it.
That's a
revealing
funny phrase to use. Just like nowadays, I think you don't necessarily think about it in that way. So it's just a funny phrase to use because you kind of think, "Oh, am I?"
Well, I guess I'm contrasting it to the manual jobs, to the hands-on jobs, those NHS jobs, the bus driver, the dockers. These are people doing practical stuff rather than administrative or office-based stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, we'd still, obviously, we have nurses living around here, but wouldn't be able to, people can't afford to buy here anymore. That's the sort of big difference, I guess, now. People are still renting, even though rents are going up as well as cost of housing to buy. But yeah, it's going to be a problem for people like that, people who are doing ordinary kind of jobs, to be able to afford even to live here at all soon, I think. I mean, I couldn't afford to buy my house now. Definitely not. It's gone up. You think, oh, that's nice, it's gone up in value, but it's only nice if you want to sell it and then go somewhere cheaper, which doesn't really happen, does it? So, if you're a landlord and then you want to sell your property to get back the money, then I guess that's nice for them. But, it's a tricky one.
We're back on the high street.
Yep, we're just going to cross over the road. This is a bit more pedestrianised, this bit. It's a traditional high street. You've got lots of big shops here, also kind of small. We do have a few fast food places, but we do have some really good sort of local restaurants as well. If you go a little bit further up past the station, there's lots of really good restaurants.
There's lots of really good South Indian and Sri Lankan restaurants, which were one of the first places that we tried when we moved in. It's called The Taste of India, and it's at the top of the road. And it's really traditional, really good food, and really cheap. Which is, I think, something there's quite a lot of restaurants like that in the area. I think they're really important for everybody to kind of test out. It kind of supports the local area, and also it gives you something different to the kind of reams and reams of like standard restaurants that you tend to find in central London. So yeah, there's some really interesting Indian restaurants, some really interesting Romanian and Polish restaurants. We've had a Filipino restaurant recently open, got a couple of really good Thai restaurants, and they're kind of home-cooked food.
I'm quite excited. Romanian and Filipino food, the two menus I've never touched.
Yeah, definitely.
I've paused just outside the building that Primark is inhabiting at the moment because there's a sort of a marbled frieze around it, and it shows Newham through the ages. Most of the images that we've passed so far have been of wartime. We've got some folk hiding in an Anderson shelter here. That could be a Junker bomber flying over the top of them, but there's rubble all around. It looks as though Newham suffered a fair bit. Maybe the bit we were just walking through didn't, but it looks like they've had some trouble. But you're saying if we go up to the end there, we get a more pleasant side to Newham's history?
Well, it sort of starts from what we know about from the very beginnings of East Ham, particularly. It was drained in the Middle Ages.
Oh, yes, we're going back in time piece by piece here. We've just got to a group of cloth-capped 1920s workers, and you can see one or two large buildings, what looks like a malt house, an oast house maybe, a church steeple, and apart from that, the place is pastoral.
Well, yeah, and there we have. Do you recognise that
building
chap there?
Do I recognise this? Okay, now the chap here is riding on a bucking horse. He's pointing a pistol at us. What, Dick Turpin?
It is Dick Turpin, yep. There, he worked locally and apparently he was as well as doing all his bad stuff, and his girlfriend lived nearby as well.
What do you mean he worked locally? What did he do?
He worked.
There you are.
What was his occupation? We're
squinting. He started his infamous career here by stealing two oxen from a local farmer in Plasto.
He did literally
who's still here.
Yeah, there you are. Robert. So he was working.
Can I just observe that the image we're being presented of him here... that sentence didn't work. The image with which we are... No? The picture of him here shows him on a horse. How do you nick two oxen if you're on a horse? That's not an easy thing to do, is it? The oxen would slow you down. I'm no expert on this.
Maybe he nicked the oxen by hand and then stole a horse later on.
Okay, I'll buy that for convenience. Yeah.
He sold the oxen to buy his horse. Yeah. There you go.
You've got this all worked out, worryingly so.
Definitely.
And here we've got a Roman. Mike, that was an enormous jump we just did in history.
Yeah, so...
In the picture there are two oxen.
The very ones.
Yeah, so the church is still standing, St. Mary Magdalene. It's right down too far away for our walk today, sadly, but it's got a nature reserve attached, which is the largest nature reserve in London. It's very nice.
That was built by the Normans circa 1150.
There you go. And
yeah.
Rather odd that they've got a Roman soldier standing outside. Maybe he's lost.
Yeah, well, there is a Roman road just nearby, so presumably that's what that's representing.
Okay, well, I hope we're all clear on that now. That's the history of the area.
Yeah, so we're going back...
We should really have done that the other way. Yeah, well, now we're going back down the street. We should have done it this way.
So it was drained, and it was used for grazing initially, and then they planted potatoes until the... potato crop failed, and then they planted cabbages and onions, and so this was all cabbage and onion fields right up to the very beginning of 20th century.
Well, I would never have guessed that, to be honest.
No?
That
no.
This was the onion heart of London. Well, no, this wasn't London at all at that point, was it?
No, it was Essex. Yeah, definitely.
Out in the onion fields of Essex.
Yeah, people used to be, because it was still, even though when it was drained... It was still a little bit damp, I guess, and there used to be lots of marsh mists and things, so people were frightened to go out at night because they thought the whole area was haunted. They smelt a bit of foul, rotting greens and things, apparently, so it doesn't sound too great, does it?
No. I was fairly certain at the beginning of this conversation we were going to get the positive spin of the area.
I'm fairly
sure you just used the word foul and rotten.
That was back in the day.
Oh, I see.
You know, many, many hundreds of years ago. This is a Romanian bakery, which is rather lovely.
Oh, cancel everything. Look at this.
Yeah.
Down by the door. You can get the best things from inside.
Yeah. Oh, that's an exquisite smell.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Two fantastic cookies and decorative cakes.
Yeah.
Could I just give you the mic and see you back here in an hour, maybe? Would that be okay?
Get some takeaway.
My favourite out of the cakes on display in the window here, and there are several amazing creative pieces, including a piano with a Dali-esque melted keyboard. But the one that really attracts my attention... is the one that's been made to look like a rock pool, upon which a mermaid made out of cake icing and a Barbie doll is reclining, whilst a Nemo-esque, larger-than-life fish sits nearby. You'd be scared to eat that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely.
For so many reasons. Well, let's move on. We're in the throbbing... commercial heart of East Ham now, I'd say. What's our next stop?
See, just peeking over the top of the houses there is a beautiful Newham Town Hall,
which I like to call our own St Pancras.
I can see that.
Pancras building.
It's got some of that high Gothic going on, doesn't it?
Impressive.
Yeah, it's quite a mixture of things. It's got a bit of the touch of the Loire Chateau as well.
What's it doing here?
Well, it is...
No, I mean, did somebody just go woo in the background? Did you just say woo?
No, I didn't.
I think that was somebody else. Somebody else in the background, definitely wasn't me.
Yeah, so, they stole it, and we've got some Accrington brick, which is obviously...
Sorry, did you... No, wait a minute. I just came back to you and you said they stole it. Who stole what?
Stole it from the Loire Chateau. No, they didn't really. Just copied the design.
I can't get a full eyeful of this at the moment because it's hiding behind another building, but it's enormous.
It was built in 1902 and it was on the site of a cabbage field. And what happened was they carried on building bits in the same style up to 1913. So it's quite a large complex, including a library funded by Carnegie and
the fire station.
So we're starting to see, I think this must be part of the complex. The brickwork looks similar. Well, it's enormous. And why?
It's a grand area.
Well, it wasn't. It was in a cabbage field.
Impressive, though. But the Victorians made it impressive.
But they've only just put the district line in. 1902, they've just put the district line in.
But that's what I think it was. Wasn't it to do with wanting to create a kind of town where people lived? Like, it was kind of done on purpose. I don't think it was like some bits which kind of have grown more organically.
No, there's nothing organic about this. This is like the Library of Alexandria being transplanted.
It is.
But it's completely out of keeping with everything else going on here.
But it wouldn't have been.
Yes, it would. I mean, look back down that way. All you can see is a two-story housing, as far as the eye can see, and then this great thing.
Actually, maybe you're right.
Yes.
It's making a statement, isn't it?
It is.
This is really important. This is our great town that we've built. Yeah. And look, here, this is where we do all the business. Because, that's what, town halls, they come up and like this.
Well, I think this looks like the idea behind this is that you should come and worship. But it's an administrative building rather than a religious building. And that, I think, says probably a lot about the last days of the empire, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that sounded good. I've got to write that down.
That did.
And it's a public hall, so they used to have dances there as well. So, that's quite a big thing, the dance there. And Bert Whedon played in his orchestra there as well. This is being taken over by Newham College now. And the town hall has been sort of rebuilt, the administrative stuff, along with the library, just a bit further up, which you can kind of see. But you can still use the hall, and I'm actually going to a Nigerian wedding engagement party there in a couple of weeks, so it's like still really ornate and lovely inside. So the modern building that you can see just a little bit further up, that's got all the council business goes on there now. This is going to
cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Be part of the college, really.
Well, it's very impressive, and it opens the place out in a way I wouldn't have imagined possible when we left the station there. It does feel now like we were down a side road.
Yeah. I think there's some really lovely and interesting architectural pieces in East Ham, from the town hall and some of the kind of local pubs that were obviously built later. When was the Boleyn built?
That was 1899.
Oh, was it?
So, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise that. I thought it was actually around the same time. And this one...
Denmark Arms here.
Denmark Arms. And they're really kind of beautiful period buildings. But then there's also some quite interesting, more modern architecture. There's some quite interesting kind of brutalist kind of tower blocks
good.
As well.
Yeah.
No, but I think it's just that interestingly in the area there is quite a few very beautiful buildings for all tastes and measures, basically. There's quite a lot of things that are nice to look at.
Are you into brutalism?
Not necessarily, but there are a couple of
interesting... When you say not necessarily, do you mean not? Because when people say brutalism is interesting, it's a little bit like if you've got a big wart on your leg, that would be interesting.
I don't necessarily agree. I think that there are some very striking buildings in East Ham.
Striking.
Some of which are brutal, some of which are beautiful, as you can see. And I think that there's a balance to be had. So it was really just in case anybody else was interested in brutalist architecture, I thought they might like to know.
I shouldn't imagine that's possible. Which way are we going?
Straight over.
Straight over the road.
Oh, are we going
over? No, Sue's going a different direction.
All right.
Sue's got plans.
Sure does. She's a woman of plans. We're heading now towards the park, and so we're just cutting along the Barking Road, which is a road that I quite enjoy because it's, again, like coming together of lots of kind of different diverse kind of areas and food, and like and lots of Polish supermarkets, which is quite fun. They seem to get some really good stuff in there. And one of our favourite restaurants is just up here, called Tippy's Cafe, which is a really nice place to stop and have a cup of tea, or you can grab some Thai food. So
really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it
the
is
Thai
really
food
good.
Is amazing. The best ever.
You two look like you know each other quite well. How do you know each other? Have you never met each other before?
No, we have met.
You have met?
Because Rachel's comes lots of things that I've done.
Yeah.
And we've just, yeah,
it's kind of community relationships. We met through the area because of East Blam and Red Door, and because of that kind of spent time together. So it's a proof of community activity. Try and cross promote, to be honest. Because there's a lot of different groups doing different things, and I think if we try and support each other, then it means that it's accessible for everybody.
You're better at it than me. She's better at promoting me than I am.
Well, you put on the gigs and bake the bread, and I'll do the social media.
Exactly, that suits me great.
Deal.
We're off down a quieter street now, past St Bartholomew's Court.
So the house on the right, this is the oldest house in East Ham from 1840. So it's a nursery now, but it used to be, amongst other things, it was the vicarage for the church, which was...
This was a vicarage?
This was the vicarage for the church, which was on the main road, but which was badly bombed in the war and has been rebuilt to make it into a surgery, a church, and some sheltered housing.
If you've got a picture of a vicarage in your mind, erase that picture. This is Georgian in style, really, and I would like you to cast your mind back to the last time you saw a BBC adaptation of Sense and Sensibility and picture one of the impressive townhouses for a family of 15. That's what you're looking at here. It doesn't have the sort of humility that you would expect of a vicarage at all. Quite grand.
About East Ham is the contradictions and the kind of the different things that all come together. So you can be on the high street, which is really bustling and busy, and there's a lot of things going on and a lot of like contradictory kind of things that you're seeing, lots of different communities and groups coming together. And then you can like dive off down a side road and come face to face with this building that looks like really it should be, I don't know, in Buxton somewhere, or you know, in a little village in the Peak District, and the town hall, which like you said could just as easily be kind of standing next to St Pancras looking like it would fit into that skyline. So there's a whole bunch of different things going on, and it's what makes it really interesting to just have a wander.
It gives us a cue as well to think that in amongst the misty, oniony, potatoy farming fields, the church is doing very nicely, thank you very much.
Yeah, sure, I'm sure it was. I wonder if it tells you something also about our assumptions about the fields, was that the area was still relatively poor, but if you look at the town hall and you look at the church hall, actually there was quite a lot of investment in the area.
Yeah.
It might be a reasonable assumption.
Yeah, and somebody owned the land,
yeah.
I guess, because it was sort of tenant farmers. Where we're going to the park in a minute, that was actually donated from the grounds of Rancliffe House. So somebody had a very big house,
yeah,
with enough grounds to be able to just give a huge chunk of it,
yeah,
away.
Did they, the people that owned the park, I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, he built all the terraced houses right round the park, didn't it? That was,
yeah,
all
it was
kind
his,
of...
It was their farmers. Land. Yeah. So basically they kind of sold bits of it off, but it was his descendants. But one of the things that we do know, though, when they had the potato crop, they had some Irish workers that were brought over from Ireland, especially to manage the potato crop, because they knew what they were doing. And they lived in some houses called Saltbox Row, which I presume were not particularly well-built houses, especially for them, but they're not there anymore.
There's lots more of those by the docks as well. Like, there's loads of workers' houses by the smaller houses, Silvertown and
yeah,
everywhere. Like, that's very different to the bigger, wider streets here, which are obviously a bit more luxurious.
Yeah, certainly down at Silvertown, some of the houses were really, really poorly built.
And very small.
Yeah.
I would be worth about 600,000 now.
Yeah,
By the end of this broadcast, they'll be worth about 70.
By the end, yeah, maybe.
Canning Town and all around there, there's a lot of rebuilding going on.
We're turning right out of St Bartholomew's Road. We're on a mystery road.
So this is Central Park Road, and you can see these houses are quite a bit bigger than some of the others that we've gone past. So,
well, they're a little, yeah. These are still reasonably compact, but certainly pressed in hugger-mugger.
Yeah, terraced houses still, but yeah.
They're really, really long, some of the roads as well. Like, when I was looking for somewhere to live around here, I looked in Manor Park just to rent, you know. I got out at one, I can't remember where, Manor Park or something, and then walked down the road thinking, oh, it'll be like a minute. And then it was like 15 or 20 minutes walking down the road. I was like, oh my God, this is so long. They're all the same. And then I got there, and the first thing the guy said to me was, you're late. And I was like, oh my God.
Yes, yes, I am. It's a really long road.
Yeah. And I said that, and he was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and you almost start at the wrong end, don't you?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Oh, one, and I need 306. One of the things we wanted to talk a little bit about was the community market we set up, which it doesn't take place right here in this park. It's a few streets away.
I should say we are not in a park.
We're nearly in
the
park.
Okay. We are. It's just there.
Okay, it's just
there. Very close.
And it's something we set it up because we wanted to bring people together, and also we thought it would be quite nice to have a market where people could sell their things that they'd made themselves, so like cakes and pots and all sorts of things, yeah. Local people, and at prices that the people who live in this area could afford, because some of the craft markets and things are quite expensive, but our market's more, it's priced for the people who live here. It's not anywhere near a tube station, so you're not going to get your footfall that you get from a lot of places, and that's worked really well. And one of the things it's done, it's enabled people to meet each other, meet their neighbours and things, because we found that there are a lot of people who'd really like to get to know other people in the area, but there isn't necessarily the opportunity that they've found to do that. Yeah. So
it was an interesting side effect of the market almost, because we'd set it up and it was in we ran the first one in Brampton Park, which is another park just down the road. And the intention was to support local makers and kind of just get everyone together. But it was about trade for the area and supporting local shops and things. And a surprising side effect was that lots of people came and had a cup of tea and got chatting and met their neighbours, and then kind of came to the next one to meet their neighbours and brought their kids and stuff like that. So it kind of became a social hub as well, which was a really nice side effect to setting up a community market, kind of to be added on the community.
Yeah, it's worked really well.
Yeah.
Various other initiatives have sort of come from that, really.
Yeah.
Seems a little bit dangerous, though. This goes against my sensibilities as a Londoner to talk community. To your neighbours.
Yes, absolutely. But it's also one of the things that makes it so nice. One of the reasons that I particularly have enjoyed living here is I didn't know my neighbours in Stepney Green or Stoke Newington, and now I know a number of them, and it makes you feel part of something. I think it's important. It's something that sometimes we lose as Londoners, and we could do with having back.
I think those people are limbering up. I want to describe what we're seeing, though, which is, it looks like two people testing the strength of the park benches. I mean, he looks like he's going for a jog. She looks like she's just stopped her pushchair and is assisting him in testing the back of that bench.
That might be what's happened. I think you're
Does
right.
she know he's limbering up rather than
I'm
fixing
not sure. I think, yeah, she's making sure that it's safe.
Okay, what I think we should do, because there's enough space, I think we should all go over there and just start doing the same thing without any explanation. Are you game?
Go on then, you first.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sounds risky.
I was going to ask you about the whole blogging thing. With you being at these community events and with people knowing that you are blogging about them, does that alter how people comport themselves in your presence?
Not so much, mostly because I try not to let everybody know that I'm blogging and be the face of that, so I don't kind of walk in and go, hi, I'm a blogger, give me something free and tell me something. Yeah. I try and enjoy the events, and people talk to you because they're interested and they're proud of what they're doing, and that's kind of the intention rather than successful blog kind of information available to people. And I think people come at it from a different angle when you do it that way. So no, so far it hasn't. Well, I don't think it has anyway.
We stopped by a fountain, which I'm sure should be doing more than it's doing, but it maybe at certain times of the day it becomes...
It needs more, I think.
It has water, but it's not switched on. So whether that's yesterday's rainwater or not, I'm not quite sure. So you can see there are four urns in this area, which was re-landscaped. It's 2010, and the urns used to be on the roof of the co-op building until it was taken, it was knocked down, but somebody thought, oh, these urns are too nice to throw away, so they put them in the park, which is...
There's a few things like that, isn't there, in this park? Because they've still got the lampposts from the train that used to... There used to be a little kid's train, and they've kept the little lampposts that kind of signify that this is where the entrance to the train was, and there's the co-op urns. And there's a few other like little historical things, kind of... It's like a good place to kind of capture a little bit of East Ham's history, isn't
it? Yeah, and there are some little signs, aren't there, as well, which tell you... things like that. And there's some nice notice boards as well, give you a bit of historical background.
Can we have the cream of that? Can we have facts about the park?
A fact about the park. There used to be an open-air theatre here, and they've put kind of supports which are showing where the actual curtains used to be, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what those are there.
Landscaped bit.
Yeah, I discovered that. There's a guy who's about 94, and he comes here twice a week and meets people, and they do two circuits of the park without talking to each other, mostly. But it's quite sweet. But it's like a little bit of exercise, and he's been doing it for years and years and years. And yeah, he told me that.
So we need to get someone to come and put a show on. Like a new show on in the flat in the nature reserve part in the flower bed.
Yeah, it's definitely something to work on. And where the tennis courts are, there used to be an open air pool. So we're going to go back out this way, up towards the cafe, which is closed at the moment.
Well, the cafe's closed at the moment, and it's something that's been sporadically open in East Ham. So it was sort of traditionally opens for about 6 months and then shuts down. And
what, under different owners? Or?
Well, it's council owned, and the council have been looking for a relationship with somebody to run it for them.
Liz, she goes for this sort of thing.
Exactly.
So just invite her along for a cup of tea, she'll end up owning the place.
That sounds like a plan. The council have been kind of tendering it for a while, and hopefully the council are looking for somebody to open a community space in there. They haven't found anybody yet, but we're all hoping that they will soon, because it's a really... It's kind of a central part of the park. And something that I think has been missing for a little while, so it would be...
Oh, it's one of those kind of cafes.
Yeah, so it was lottery funded, so the building...
Oh, your point... Oh, this is it here?
Yeah, this is the cafe here.
Right, so we're looking at a very extravagant shed. You can very easily imagine these shutters pulling aside to reveal a really usable space here in the centre of the park.
Yeah, so it was lottery funded, I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I'm not 100% sure, to build the building for exactly that reason. And then for one reason or another, it doesn't seem to have managed to stay open. So I think it's something that would be really good to see back open and supporting the area. I know the council are keen to have community activities in there and to work with somebody who wants to kind of support the community through the space. So.
Seems like a bit of a no-brainer, but then we're saying that on a lovely summer's day. I wonder if this is a seasonal issue.
Yes, perhaps.
Because there's a few other parts with similar sorts of buildings, and some of them have been a roaring success and others seem to be suffering the same sort of...
And it's got all those doors that all open out. They need to all be open, really. Yeah. You can't kind of be in it with them shut. It doesn't work. So it needs to be able to be warm enough to be...
Yeah, potentially. I mean, even if they had it open 6 months of the year, I think it would be worth doing.
So this sculpture here is, there are a couple of them, and it was from 2012, so it's an Olympic gymnast sculpture.
And the sculpture we're looking at, well, if I didn't know better, I'd say it was somebody who... It looks like a corpse, honestly. I'm sure this isn't the intention. Oh, it's a backbend. It looks like someone who's been murdered and their body placed over their own tombstone. Oh, dear.
That's a morbid way to look at it, I think.
I'm going to photograph this, and the listener, tell me if I'm not right about this.
I knew I should have shown you the weightlifter one.
I've made an assumption, Liz, with your interests. Are you an artist yourself?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Yeah.
What sort of artist, eh?
I do have done lots of different things, but at the moment I'm just drawing. But
visual art?
Yeah.
What do you think of this?
It's not my favourite. But, you know,
but it
it's all right. Yeah.
Art and it's here.
Exactly.
I'll get something like
that. We have these great events in the park, and they're put on by the council for free. And they have the Newham show, which is two days of, like, a traditional kind of country show with jam making and things, and also have like a bit of music, children's entertainment, all sorts of things like that. And then we have four nights of live music, free, called Under the Stars. And we have the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra doing the last night with firework display. But we have a rock night, a pop night, a bangla night. And yeah, and the
reggae,
like, traditional
reggae night.
Oh, reggae night.
And that all happens on this spot.
Mm, over there. Yeah. So they've got, who have they got this year? I have got my magazine because I couldn't remember who all the different people were. So talk amongst yourselves while I find.
Well, I'm going to talk amongst myself. It's what I do. As we come over to the other side of the park, we can see, I would say, a slightly more spacious sort of architecture going on. We're being directed away from it by Sue, who wants us to remain in the park. She will not let us leave.
We can go that way.
We can check out any time we like.
And we can go around the edge of the bowling
alley. Or we can leave. Yes, anyway.
Direction.
Go on. So, I can tell you who is going to be performing here. Junior Marvin's... Wailers, is that?
Yeah.
Carol Thompson. And we've got...
What's the first one again?
Junior Marvin's Wailers.
Is that three different... act or
no that's smooth reggae classics. Junior Marvin was an original member of Bob Marley and the Wailers.
There you go.
So that's where the Wailers
I'm really hoping that you moonlight as a DJ. I would listen to your show.
Look, Saturday we've got Bjorn again, Alexandra O'Neill and Heatwave. So good classic things. But it's all free.
You're such an aggressive announcer. Listen to this, it's music. You're going to be comparing, right?
No, I will be here though. Just attending.
We're coming up for our fifth complete circuit of the park now. I'm thinking about writing to my relatives to let them know where I am.
See, did you want to talk about the war memorial?
Yeah.
So will it get me out of here?
Yes, sure.
Is that the price I have to pay to leave?
Yes.
Right, tell me about the war memorial.
So, this is our own cenotaph, designed in the style of Lutyens, by the Mayor of East Ham, Robert Banks Martin. And what they've done recently, there were five people who were awarded the Victoria Cross in World War One from Newham, and they have made a plaque for each one and had a big ceremony to unveil them and everything.
Where are the plaques on the memorial itself?
They're sort of next to it. And the latest one was a boy called Jack Cornwell, who's one of the youngest people to be awarded it, and he was only 16 and he was a boy in the Navy. And his ceremony was the other week. I think the plaque isn't actually in position yet. They're probably getting it all ready. But these are two that were here.
Second Lieutenant Edgar Miles, Midshipman George Drury. Looks like there's a space there where somebody else might have their plaque. These stones were laid to honour the brave men of East Ham and West Ham, who were awarded the Victoria Cross during World War One. The whole East Ham, West Ham thing, is it actually different sides of the same town, or are they distinct units?
They were distinct units, and now they've been joined together to make Newham. West Ham is very well connected. I preferred this bit because it's got much more traditional housing, and they did suffer quite a lot in the wars, had a lot of bomb damage and things like that.
Did they make the mistake of having factories there?
I think they must have done, yeah. We only had the odd little factory, which was things like fish skin drying and horse boiling, so they weren't really
horse
in the
boiling.
Heart of, not in the heart of the community.
Where did we boil the horses?
No, why did you boil the horses? Not where, what?
Somewhere far away, and presumably to make glue and byproducts with the things. Yeah, in East Ham, but like not, you know, on the edge.
Bex and Alps.
It's probably Beckton.
Yeah.
Beckton Out. We should talk about Beckton.
I think we've run out of time to talk about Beckton. We need to go to Red Door Studios now.
Right, I think I've worked out the dynamics here. Liz, you're the loose cannon here. You say the thing you shouldn't have said, and these two, being far more diplomatic, try to wallpaper over your mistake.
No.
Which means we now have to talk about Beckton.
No, Beckton's interesting. It's just we've just worried about time. You have to talk about Beckton.
Used to have a dry ski slope called Beckton Alp, and it's got an amazing view from the top of it, and it's really strange to go up to the top now. It's all derelict, and like,
have you been up to the top?
Yeah, it's amazing. You can 360 degree view of as far as you can see London. It's amazing.
Didn't they have a film studio up there as well? Because wasn't the Blur video filmed up there or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah,
and it's all gone now. A Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
that was filmed in Beckton.
They built the whole. You know, war-torn bit there with palm trees. You know, Stanley Kubrick wouldn't leave the country. He wanted to film everything here, so they had to build the war-torn.
Yeah, and they set fire to tyres to create the the smoke and that, and people didn't really like it who lived there.
Well, surprisingly,
it obscures the smell of the boiling horses.
Yes. And the sewer.
Right, we're
going
to
head down to Red Door.
Yeah.
Oh, we're leaving the park. Yes, we're leaving the park. And we're no, that's not a very nice attitude at all, is it?
It's a beautiful park.
It is a beautiful park. And we are heading to Red Door Studio.
It's right here.
Is it?
2 minutes.
Liz has produced from her bag the biggest set of keys you've ever seen. And we're stopping at a set of Red Doors.
Big key.
We've made it to Red Door.
We're here. We're in a greenhouse.
Yeah.
We're in a sort of a lean-to affair, which is letting in the sunshine. And lots of found furniture here, which is a very pleasing thing. Through another red door into a glorious area. White tiles, wood beams, enormous Scrabble tiles in the corner next to the Welsh dresser. A piano in the corner. And some of the most... I think those chairs have been stolen from a wedding. The hire company is missing three of them.
I don't like these chairs. I thought they might be better if they were... They're already over the top. If they were really over the top and gold. That's why I did one of them gold, to try and make them a bit more OTT, to make them better.
So we're here, we're at Red Door.
So
what's your speed? I know you're bad at promoting yourself. And do you know what? Actually, I've just realised, if you're bad at promoting yourself...
Rachel, tell us
about Red Door.
Well, you might have to do the history, Liz, but it's an artist studios, and they also run art events, music events. Recently, they've had a short film festival and film nights, which has been amazing. You run... life drawing occasionally, and you have some artists in residence, which maybe you might want to talk about. I think you can take over now.
Okay, teacher. Yeah, that's about right. We're mainly artist studios, which is kind of the rest of the building, but I like working with people as well, and so we wanted to keep this space open sometimes, not all the time, to the public. We work with local people who usually come to me, because it's a very grassroots DIY venture. It's not, we don't have funding, and I've kind of wanted to do things with people who want to do things, and they have to really want to do things to do it, because it has, I'm not organizing everything. I'll do lots of helping and stuff, but yeah, so we have a few different events that happen, and also I work here all the time on my other stuff, so everything that is in here is kind of collected by me and part of my life, really. And so there's lots of artwork and different objects and things that are here. And it's not the kind of, I haven't just bought things and put them in to make it feel like a certain kind of atmosphere, that every single thing is kind of different and interesting. So there's lots of stories about the building, and it's a lovely building, and it's all completely been left, and it's always been a workshop. It's an industrial building, even though it's small, and it's Victorian, And so everything, you know, all the tiles are very, very worn. That's because there's been lots of kind of, there's been furnaces and there's been lots of quite hard work going on in here for a long time. So that's another thing that I think is important, is to keep things, it's a place where things are made and produced and by hand, you know, not en masse. Yeah, that's the idea, really.
So you are now the supervisor, the caretaker?
Yeah. I never know what to call myself, ever. I think caretaker's a good one. But I run I run what happens here, and I run a cafe on Saturdays, not every Saturday sometimes, and I organise the things that happen as well. And I work on my own stuff from here as well.
It's a truly wonderful spot. It's got a very comfortable vibe. I was a few episodes ago, we were at Leighton House, and in other episodes we've also been in the homes of artists. And or in the places where the private, the personal, and the showroom cross over with each other.
That's definitely
right. I wondered how easy are you with that idea of letting people into your personality, I suppose.
I mean, sometimes I guess it's no. I like it because I think there's a lack of it in everywhere, really. Probably mainly in London. I don't know, but there's a lack of kind of real personal things, and I want people to come in, and it's different and it's part of a personality, you know. I think that it's not generic.
And it brings us kind of to a conclusion. I've noticed that we're all sitting comfortably. There's a need for tea, and tea and podcasts are not usually terrifically compatible, so it might be a time to sort of start to draw to a close, really. Thank you all for today and for the tour of East Ham. I want to just draw people's attention to your various projects very specifically so people can dig in and find out more if they feel so inclined, or if they're in the area, they know what to drop into and keep an eye out for. Sue, how would you like to connect with people?
I've got a website, which is suesintonsmith.com.
Which is a great name, by the way.
Thank you. And also in the area, we've got East Ham South, is our Twitter name. Which is the Greatfield Residents Association, so that's involved in all the market and all those kind of things. And footprintsoflondon.com is the tour guides.
How about you, Rachel?
You can find the blog at eastblam.co.uk, and we're on all the usual social media channels, so you can find us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well. You can also find information about Red Door and about Footprints on there, so it's quite a good central hub for information for East Ham. Oh, and don't forget, we've got the new WI that's just started, East Edge Sisters. You can find them on Twitter as well.
What have you got coming up here? That's
not much.
That's that nose for marketing kicking in again.
No. We do have a Facebook. It's Red Doors E6. And we are open on Saturdays. Not all Saturdays, so some Saturdays. But I usually try and open every Saturday except the last Saturday of the month. And we have really good homemade cake and homemade bread and other lovely food and tea and coffee, and you can come in and sit.
Sue Sinton Smith, Rachel Matthews, Liz Claff, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Liz Claff, Sue Sinton Smith and Rachel Matthews. Thanks to Bernie Vitley. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership.
Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.